Rob Brown here with the Accounting Influencers podcast, continuing with our series of the future of accounting panels, where we invite the good and the great to talk about what is happening with accounting. We have a very esteemed panel today. I'm going to get the guests to introduce themselves. How do we decide what's coming up in the future? And does it even matter? Does accounting need to change? Does it have an image problem? Is there really a talent shortage? What really counts in making the accountants of today relevant and competitive? So many questions to answer. And what we do know is we can't leave accounting on its own to flounder or flourish. There are certain things that need to be said and certain things that need to be done. So our panel are going to give us all the answers today. I'm going to get them to introduce themselves. And Gary, I'm going to start with you. A quick 10, 20 seconds so the audience know who you are and who we've got speaking. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Rob. Gary Seamus. I'm with Winding River Consulting. We are starting our eighth year. We do strategy consulting for CPA firms all over the world. Also do leadership development training through my program called Managing Partner Bootcamp. And prior to that, I started and I ran a CPA firm for 27 years that turned into be a top 40 firm. Sold that firm to BDO 9 years ago. And at that point was BDO's largest transaction in their 104-year history.
It's a decent pedigree. Thank you. Lexi, over to you.
Hi, Rob. Lexi Kessler. I am the Mid-Atlantic leader for Aprio. We are a public accounting consulting firm headquartered in Atlanta, and I reside out of the DC region, Washington, DC. We have 2,200 employees across the United States, the Philippines, and Colombia. In addition to my role at Aprio, I also am very passionate about our profession, and I am a previous chairman of the board for the Maryland State Society of CPAs, currently on the board of directors for the AICPA, and I am also currently the vice chair-elect for the chairman of the board for the AICPA in May.
Super. Great to have you with us. Roger Connect. Hello, sir.
Hello there. Yes, Roger Connect, president of Universal Accounting Center. We actually work as a post-secondary school for accounting professionals, helping them actually prepare for these needs of the small business community as it relates to skills, certifications, coaching. We essentially work with the individuals that are pursuing their careers, as well as starting and building successful bookkeeping, accounting, and tax businesses.
Fantastic. Mr. Calvin Harris, good day, sir.
Hey, good day, Rob. How are you doing? Again, Calvin Harris, the CEO of the New York State Society of CPAs. We are the oldest CPA society out there, so I'm honored to be its leader. I myself am a CPA as well. I guess I've been a CPA half of my life at this point, which is a scary thing to say, but I'm really glad to be with you today.
Thank you. And here in the UK, we tend to think that the world revolves around us, but we have an all US panel today. And just to get some perspective, I do believe there are more accountants in the state of New York than there are in the whole of the United Kingdom. But we'll continue to think that we are the center of the universe. Great to have you all with us. Let's kick off with a question. And Gary, I'll start with you. You've been in this game a long time. Accountants, do they need to change, or is it okay that they just carry on doing what they're doing for this profession to be successful? How about that one?
Do they need to change? I think the profession is changing. In my mind, not in a great way, but I think the profession is becoming much more transactional and less relationship oriented. You know, when I came up through this profession, it was relationship. It was the trusted advisor. You know, we were the guy, you know, or the gal who, you know, would be the partner for the business owner because they wouldn't really have a partner. And I think we all loved it. And I think it was just a huge role. But what's happening today is because there's less accountants and there's more work to be done, I think we're seeing the shift to a much more transactional business, almost like a bank. So if you think about that, you know, it's a very different skill set than being a trusted advisor.
Calvin, speaking to that, if the profession is getting more transactional, does it have a brand issue?
Well, I'll say the CPA brand, I think, is as strong as ever. But I think accounting as a whole absolutely has a branding and a relevancy issue. I think even getting two or three accountants to even agree on what our role is or what our role should be is a challenge. So, and odds are, if you get three answers, all three will have some merits to it. So we absolutely have a branding challenge on the whole. We have a relevancy challenge. And I think even though technology, you know, for example, is something that can make our jobs far more efficient, far more effective than ever, That very technology is one of the things that we're struggling with in terms of defining and redefining our relevance. You ask the average person, because I certainly hear it all the time, they'll be like, oh, well, aren't accountants going away? So, well, they're absolutely not going away, but they absolutely are changing. And we are way behind in that conversation.
Yeah, we're going to come on to talent soon, Lexi, and I know you've got a vested interest in that with the advisory group you're in. But if I were to ask you, Lexi, what kind of shape the accounting profession is in right now, what would you say?
I think it's in a state of change. You know, I think that there's still tremendous opportunity for anybody that wants a career in accounting. And it's about time that it changes too, by the way. It's needed to for several years. And I think that just our world, you know, I think the pandemic kicked everybody and you know what to forward in as far as how we had to work with each other and how we work with our clients. And it's made us all realize that we really do need to change. And so I think change management is a huge piece for any organization. We have to be able to pivot quickly. We have to be able to anticipate. We have to be able to, and Gary, to your point, I do believe that it's been a little bit more difficult to have those relationships. But I do think that they are still there. It's just harder to do it. But I do believe that they are still there.
Roger, you deal with a lot of entrepreneurial firm owners who can pivot on a dime and are known for a little bit more agility. What shape do you feel the accounting profession is in?
Well, I'm going to say good. I'm going to be optimistic and say that there's a demand for it. Gary pointed out that there's a shortage as to the services being provided to the business community. So when you're looking at it from a demand point of view, we're not going anywhere. The small business community especially is in demand of the expertise that the accounting profession can bring to their abilities to be profitable as businesses. But the challenge that we're facing is I think we're in a technology change. I think the tools that we use to do our job are evolving. I believe that with AI coming on the scene, there's a flux going on as to people's understanding and knowledge of how to use those tools. So unless you lean forward and actually do the training, become a little bit more familiar with what the tools are, I think you're going to be frustrated as business owners lean to you for understanding of what's happening in their business, getting real-time information, actionable information. And yet with the commoditization, the transactional basis of the work that we do, you're going to be in a position of want if you're not able to actually help your clients understand what they can be doing to kind of take the information that we're providing through the financials and act on them.
We're setting the scene here that it is a profession in flux. When we talk about the drivers of change, Calvin, where do you see the threats coming from for the accounting profession?
Well, the threats are all around us, and heck, some of the threats are in the profession itself. I think our biggest threat is the resistance to the change. You know, because it in so many cases, those of us who are in power or influence came up differently. You know, heck, my career began 30 years ago. It's getting harder and harder to pinpoint that. So let's just say 30. And the firm I worked at, we were talking about it at just an event last night, how when we needed to find a pronouncement, we went into the library and we needed to look at the library, make sure we had the right version, the right. You don't do that anymore. You can just pick up your phone and figure those things out. So I think our biggest threat is our inability to change and embrace the change, even though it may not feel familiar. It won't feel familiar. And so many of us are having to figure it out as I go along. I still see that as our biggest threat. It's also our biggest opportunity, by the way. I think the other threat is on what I talked about earlier, although it's very connected, is on relevance and our defining the story of accountancy, us defining how important the role of the accountant is. I see that as a place where we're just way behind in terms of the communication that I see when people are talking about accounting. When it comes up, it's more often when I hear about it in public sphere, I typically hear about what our challenges are, what our deficiencies are, and it really doesn't talk about the opportunities, which I think will continue to hurt us over time.
Lexi, when we talk about threats to the accounting profession, some people I speak to say that some of the threats are self-inflicted, in that we don't change as much as we should do, but some of the threats are external and come from outside. Where do you see the challenges to where we're going?
I do think that regulation, obviously, is something that is going to not go away. And so I do think that, you know, organizations need to have the guardrails in place. It's becoming more complex. It's why one of the things that we're, that council, the AICPA council has a mandate, is about looking to make some changes in how we become a CPA, right? But without losing mobility, for example, within the United States. And that can be a threat to a business CPA firm that is multiple states across the United States of how do you manage and work that. So that's one of the reasons we're so focused on that, is to try to make sure we do the best we can to preserve it. But I do believe that the change piece of it is an important piece of it. And it's complicated. Nobody likes to hear that. There's a lot of stakeholders in our ecosystem that need to work together. And the reality is we all want to be successful in this, right? We all want the same result. So yeah. I think that sometimes, and with the profession as well, I want to tag on to something Calvin said, is that what we need to do is change how we speak. We need to celebrate our successes, not our challenges. And we need to change the dialogue.
That's an interesting point. Gary, Roger, anything else you want to come in on there on the threats that we're facing, Gary?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a lot simpler. And, I think our threats are self-inflicted. We shot ourselves in the foot. And to me, it's really simple. It gets to the economics of what we do. The requirements to become a CPA have expanded. It takes 150 hours in most states, 5 years of education. And our starting salaries are woeful. You can make more as a starting policeman than you can as a starting accountant. And I think we absolutely shot ourselves in the foot. You know, and I could go on and on and on about it. I was a big opponent 30 years ago, before Calvin started, with the AICPA and the push to 150 hours. I was just so against it. I actually had my picture on the front of Accounting Today and pretty much got blackballed in the profession from getting involved with AICPA and others because I was so against it. And I think I was right at that point in time. But this whole element was starting salaries. Right now, I sit on the board of a couple of the private equities that are out there right now, and I'm working with one of them right now on a really interesting project. And the project is we're looking at starting salaries. And we're looking up, and you know, we all know the answer to this. Okay, you increase starting salaries by $15,000. Okay, well, we can do that, you know. But you know, at Apria, what about the 2,000 people who are above the beginning people, mm-hmm. and what do we do with all of them? So it's a big problem. It's a big economic problem for firms. But you know, here I have a private equity that's well funded with billions of dollars, and is looking at this thing, and they see a huge opportunity that they may be willing to invest in. And all of a sudden, if they start at $100,000 versus 65, I think a lot of people are going to want to work for them, and it's going to kind of wake up people. So I think the profession has got to challenge the return on investment for the educational in order to make any of this work. And it is not an easy solution because we have really cemented this into the way we operate.
We're slowly edging towards a conversation about accounting as a career choice. But Roger, real quick, I know you've got one foot in the education side of accounting. You go into schools and universities. How fit for purpose do you feel the accounting qualifications and certifications are in today's world?
I'm going to say not enough. One of the things that I know that's on the table is the number of hours needed for the CPA. There's merit in that discussion simply because of the fact that so many people just take general eds to fill those hours to get the credits necessary. But what I'd like to address is the fact that I think, to Calvin's point earlier, there's something to be said about the CPA designation. It is very, very highly recognized today, but within the profession, I feel that what we've got is a misunderstanding or a devaluation of the other roles in the accounting profession that, as we were talking about threats earlier, I don't think the business community clearly understands what a bookkeeper is, what an accountant is, what a CPA is, what a CFO is, what an advisor is, all of which are terms that are now in the business community that they're using synonymously as they speak of accounting professionals. Yet, like the medical profession, a dermatologist is not a gynecologist, is not a pediatrician, is not a heart surgeon. And yet what we as a profession have done is we've kind of put this term out there for the business community to believe that an accountant can do everything. And yet there is a lot to be said for the skills related to bookkeeping, especially for tax preparation, for tax planning and advisory. And I dare say that not any one accountant is awesome, phenomenal in all.
certainly opened up a can of worms there. I'm just thinking in the UK, we have the Chartered Accountancy Certification and a Certified Accountant. But I wonder if that's part of the problem, Lexi, that you ask 100 accountants what they are and you'll get 100 different answers. Even defining trusted advisor or defining what a CPA is and does. So again, we come back to the brand, don't we?
Well, I think that's a beautiful thing, though.
Right.
I mean, I think if you have a broad umbrella of defining what the profession is, that means that there's a world of opportunity.
True.
Right? That you're not pigeonholed into one direction. You can go and get your accounting degree, become a CPA, and you have all these choices. And that's one of the things we don't celebrate, is that it can be any of those, anything within that spectrum. And that's one of the things that's so attractive, I think, about the profession.
I had a pal that he works for Deloitte's. And he went into a school here in the UK and as a career day. And he said to the children, who knows what an accountant is? They had absolutely no clue. They had some vague notion of numbers. So when you go to the younger generation, and I guess we'll get into the question now, how attractive do we feel accounting is as a career choice? And is it truly understood that for those people coming through, it is a really interesting, fascinating career? Calvin, do you want to jump in on that?
Yeah, Rob, I think you said a really important part just from the beginning in terms of awareness. I think when people, you know, students especially, younger folks especially, understand the different things that an accountant can do, then they're like, wow, okay, I'm in. It's getting to that point of them being aware that ends up being such a big challenge. I've talked many times about how my late mother was a high school bookkeeping teacher. Well, I knew pretty early on what my path was. It was either going to be, and I knew my father worked for the federal government, was generally not happy with what he was doing. So I was either going to be a teacher or an accountant. The accountant won out. But I had the awareness early, and I had a chance to really see what was there. I think the opportunities now to join the profession are so much greater than what I had when I joined. And by the way, I'm 120 CPA, Gary. So I remember the conversations, but I slid in just in time. I think once they're aware, it becomes amazing. When we can control that narrative, or at least drive the narrative, we'll see a huge thing. Because if you just go by what you see, it's amazing that we have people even joining the profession in general. Because when you see us in popular culture, you know, pop culture, you see us as a punchline, or, you know, there was a movie, The Accountant, where I think Ben Affleck was a hitman. So, you know, that's what we all do, of course, as accountants. But yeah, I think when we control that narrative, we'll see, and we'll be able to get some real impact on people being more interested in the profession.
But despite what the narrative is, I'll bring you in after this, Lexi, but despite what the narrative is, if the starting salary for a CPA and accountant is $20,000, $50,000 lower than the starting salary for a lawyer, for instance, or even a policeman, goodness me, then it doesn't matter how you brand up the job and how interesting it is, it becomes an economic decision. We've got some stats coming out of Europe about the falling birth rates, and countries are just dying. Italy is a great example, the one-to-one. One person dies, one person lives, and people cannot afford a house. They can't afford anywhere to live and raise a family and all these extra economics going on. Lexi, I'll bring you in on this, and then I'll bring Gary in on his thoughts.
So I had several thoughts. First off, Calvin, I love the fact that your mother was a high school accounting teacher, because how I got introduced to accounting was 11th grade Mrs. Wilson's accounting class in high school.
There you go.
Who can forget Mrs. Wilson's class?
That's right. That's right. And that's where it was like, oh, this is so logical to me, right?
Someone
and
turned it on for you. This. Someone this turned the light on, didn't they?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And those programs aren't there anymore. One of the things that is trying to occur is, from an advocacy perspective, is getting STEM, accounting as part of the STEM, to get funding in the schools, and also targeting really underserved communities that don't know what a CPA is. I mean, I didn't have a CPA in my family. I wasn't but anyway, it was, we just have to get some more messaging out. The other thing is that I think that we've got a lot of stakeholders in this ecosystem of our profession, and we all have a role to play in it. And the firms have a role to play in this. And Gary, to your point, it is starting salaries. And yes, there's the business model of public accounting needs to change, period. That's why you're seeing private equity. It's a mechanism to effectuate that change. But with the starting salaries, it's also the hours. I mean, you can't have somebody come in and tell them they're going to work 50 hours, and then you expect them to work 80 or 90 hours a week. I mean, that's just, it's not today's world anymore. It was before, but it's a different dynamic. And also to your point about declining demographics, when we in the National Pipeline Advisory Group, we're actually looking at a lot of data. And what the data is showing is about 1 in 8 people, just to shorten this, that go into college, complete college, and become a CPA, it's 1 in 8. If we can just get 3 of 8 or 2 of 8, even with the demographics given where they are, we will see significant change. So we're really trying to focus on what are the key drivers to at least start to move the needle, which is something that's like a midterm piece, like short-term, midterm, and long-term. What can we be doing to help with the pipeline? But anyway, those are some of the points I wanted to raise.
Yeah. Gary?
I still stand by my comments that this is economic-based and we have to fix it. I mean, you know, Lexi, you may be right. I've never really kind of thought about, you know, the private equity. Most of the private equity, they really, one in particular has really got taking a really strong look at the model. Most of them are not. Most of them are absorbing the existing model and trying to figure out what to do with it. And you might be right. I mean, that might be the way to potentially make these changes. But I think they have to be made. This economic model, it just doesn't work. And, you know, we have to figure out.
I agree.
It
has to completely change. And that's the piece where it's less relevant for the individual that wants to be a CPA.
Roger, have you got the solution?
I'm not a solution, but I've got a thought. One of the things that I really liked about what Lexi shared is that the accounting profession is quite broad. There's a lot of opportunities in it. You can actually specialize in a number of areas as it relates to business, but I consider it a two-sided coin. One of the things that we need to do is really control the narrative, as Calvin was explaining, to say that this is a viable profession, something that people want to be drawn to. And by giving them that excitement, they'll see that this is something that they can do as a career. But I think the part that we're missing is we need to flip over the coin and, like the medical profession, talk about the stories that we're having as it relates to individuals and businesses and help the upcoming accounting professionals understand that they can really be not only impactful at the economy level, but also at the small business level, working with business leaders, helping basically businesses stay alive and thrive. There's lives impacted by that. There's stories behind that. There's individuals behind that. And what I believe is that the accounting profession is an essential part of our economy and of our community. And I believe too many people just see it as a job, a career. It's something I can do with a skill that I have. And what we need to do is kind of amp it up a little bit more and make it sexy so that it's actually something appealing, so that I want to do this. This is fun. There is money to be made. There's a long path as it is for careers and making money perhaps. And we've got to shorten that so that people can enter it and be successful. But I like the stories. I like the fact that we have so many wonderful discussions about how accounting made a difference in a transaction, the sell of a business, keeping a business alive, helping it avert bankruptcy, helping it become profitable, helping it so that it could get funded and go public. I mean, there's a lot of successes that the accounting profession can actually deliver as it relates to what's happening in the business world.
The problem, as I see it, though, Roger, is that these stories are well-kept secrets. And even accountants themselves are not great advocates for what they do. There's something called proximity bias, where you get so close to what you do, you don't see it as remarkable. It's actually quite mundane. So I want to come to the question, whose responsibility is it to ensure that the accounting profession is future ready or relevant, as Calvin would say? Where would you start with that, Gary?
When I teach my leadership development course, Managing Partner Bootcamp, we teach a lot of classes, but one of the classes that I teach, it's my favorite class, is on strategy and execution. And what I talk about is how strategy is really easy and not hard to find strategy. You know, look what others are doing. You know, people share thoughts. But the real challenges and the differences between firms is the ability to execute. And, we were talking a little bit before about Aprio, where Lexi's worth. I give her her colleagues a tremendous amount of credit because they have been absolutely amazing in terms of the execution of their strategy. By the way, just so you know, I was involved with their strategy when we first put it in place 7 years ago. They have done an amazing job in terms of execution. And I think that's what we're talking about right now. You know, we're talking about, you know, how do we execute something like this? And I'm just not sure how we would do that because there's just so many moving parts from someone taking the leadership to do it. You know, and is it the college professors? Is it the AICPA? You know, is it the state societies? You know, somebody needs to galvanize in order to execute if we're going to make changes. And, you know, I'm just not sure I see who's going to be doing this. I mean, I could go and say, you know, this is the one who should do it. You know, when Lexi takes over the ICPA, maybe that'll be her job. but somebody needs to, you know, execute on the strategy. The strategy is not hard. I mean, all of us just talk right through it. It's just this execution that's really a mountain.
Lexi, you talked about the sheer number of stakeholders. We haven't really even mentioned the vendors, the tech providers who are driving the technological change and maybe pushing accountants to go further. Roger, you deal a lot with the entrepreneurial firm owners that are running completely virtual firms now and really changing the way firms are run. So if I don't want to lay the blame at anyone's feet, but I'm still interested in where the responsibility lies for driving change. Roger?
I've got an option here. My thinking is that the responsibility lies in the profession, and it's beholding to us that are actually the leaders in the profession to create a place where this actually occurs. So here's my explanation. The remote training work that's going on right now is causing us as a profession to become much more isolated, individualized. And I really believe that what we need are more events, live events, where individuals can come and associate with their peers. And this is where the stories can be shared, the case studies demonstrated as to how we as a profession are making things successful and profitable for our clients. The thing that I would point out is these live events afford us the ability to tap into people at an individual level and make things exciting and fun, draw them into a community where they say, I want to be part of this. This is something I want to continue doing. This is something that I'm glad I'm a part of. And they're going to go back home and speak to their peers and say, you know, there's something happening within the accounting community that you need to be involved in, and you need to participate and attend these things, because it's not just the continuing education that's going on. It's the peer relationships. It's the education. But perhaps more than anything, it's the fact that we can actually celebrate a lot of the successes that we're having. And like you were saying, basically put some spotlights on the things that we're actually doing that makes a difference within the business world.
One of the ways I feel the industry, as Gary said, shoots itself in the foot is calling it an industry instead of a profession, like the medical profession or the legal profession. So many people talk about an accounting industry, and actually it's more in America than it is in the UK. The chartered accountants here are a little bit posh and nose up, and they've earned the right to be a profession. But maybe there's a little bit of self-sabotage. Calvin, you'd never call it an industry, would you?
I will admit, I think calling it profession is probably as much of a habit as anything else, because industry doesn't really bother me, since it's still an appropriate title.
Sure.
But I think to the broader point that everybody seems to be getting at is I don't think there's any one thing that's going to get the profession where it needs to be. I haven't heard anyone say anything as something we should do that I agree with. It's like, yeah, we should do that. Oh, yeah, we should do that as well. Oh, yeah, we should do that as well. I think multi-pronged approaches are going to be required. It will have to look in places where we haven't consistently looked to find talent. And also when it comes to how we approach doing things. And I think to reiterate, I think, well, you know, what I heard Gary say is, so much of this is execution. A lot of cases, we know what we need to do. It's just, do we have the will to do it? And recognizing that, like so many things, when there's change, it will feel uncomfortable at times. Then we'll get used to it, and then we'll thrive. I truly think we can thrive. But so much of it is we just need to act. We just need to execute on some of the things we know that are holding us back.
I'm just reminded of it. Of a psychology study that was done. There was a murder took place in a tenement building in New York. And this is a true story.
Well, why does it have to be New York?
It's just the way it was, Calvin, even though you're from New York. But you can imagine a quadrant, and there's some land or garden or something in the middle, and people's apartments looking in on the outside. And this woman got stabbed and she bled out. Now, it sounds a horrific story, and indeed it was. But nobody called the police. Nobody. And when they asked the people afterwards, why didn't you call the police? Their answer was, well, I thought somebody else would. Everyone was watching it. I thought somebody's bound to call the police. And you arrive at this conclusion that if everyone thinks everyone else is going to do it, who's actually going to take the baton? We say baton here in the UK, but who's going to? It's like everyone needs to play the part, but nobody wants to go first. Or Alexei, I guess, is it a problem of consensus?
I think, well, first of all, quite the analogy there.
Sorry about that. It just came out. Nobody's dying here. We just want to stress that. Nobody's dying.
Nobody is. I do think that part of this National Pipeline Advisory Group that's been formed, 22 individuals representing various stakeholders, right? And it's been very educational and eye-opening to me about how much really is involved. But there also is more going on. I just don't think people are hearing about it. I mean, the AAA right now, they're doing some pilot program where it's going to be changing the curriculum for entry level, the first introduction to accounting course, and doing more business simulations so that students can see what this is like, and then focusing on the technical pieces of it. But starting to bring real world cases into the classroom so that people can envision it. That's one example. NASBA is a regulators. They have a task force that's put together where they are starting to look at how do we help with the pipeline issues. A lot of the state societies are doing a lot of reach out to the high schools, to different places within their states to help educate what is our profession about. AICPA is funding the National Pipeline Advisory Group, but every state has its own rules. Right. So we got to work with that. But you've got academia, you've got the regulators, you've got business and industry, you've got public accounting, large firms, small firms. All of that is that ecosystem I was referring to earlier. And I do see and hear places where people are doing things. It just hasn't bubbled up to the top yet, I think. But it doesn't. We have to do more, though. I will be clear. We do have to do more.
But don't we have a significant timing problem here, the way I see it? So I work with firms on a real-time basis, and firms right now have to deal with this, okay? They have to. They can't find enough people. So, I own a conference called Winning Ways that I own with Alan Colton in the world. In our first year of the conference, we had the conference on capacity without people. And what we talked with is what firms are dealing with in terms of that. And the firms really, we really ended up saying firms have four levers to go forward. Hiring and retention, which we're talking about today. Mm-hmm. In order to replace that, what we have is we have process, which could be technology, artificial intelligence, outsourcing. I think I heard Philippines and Colombia from you. And then lastly, just good practice management. So what's mm-hmm. happening is firms are reacting today in order to have capacity to do the work right now. They can't wait 8 years. And what does it look like in 8 years after firms have already made this pivot to start functioning in a different way than they have in the past in order to do capacity?
Right. And I think that there's some things that AICPA has done relative to the short term, where they have worked with different organizations. For example, they've expanded the amount of time to be able to sit for the exam. So students now have 30 months to be able to pass the exam. NASBA and the states, different states have to approve this, but they did approve being able to, if you lost credit for the exam during COVID, during certain timeframes, those credits can be restored. I mean, that's 18,000 people. So there are some short-term things. There's the ELE program that's through Tulane University that Aprio is participating with and helping students that just need to get that last 30 at a significantly reduced, I think like $450 a credit hour for their 30, and looking to really, how is it we can get more experiential learning into those 30 hours? There's lots of thoughts and ideas, and that's what we'll be presenting at May Council, is a report with some of those thoughts and ideas for midterm, short-term, and then long-term. But there are some things short-term, and you're right, it's not 8 years, but if we can at least get somebody graduated with a degree and get them through the license, that's short-term.
So at Winding River, I mean, we work with about 150 firms on a regular basis. So I see it every day. And I don't mean to, diminish what you just said, but this conversation about short-term relief through what's going on right now, it has never come up one time in my 150 firms. They're talking about India. They're talking about the Philippines. They're talking about AI. They're talking about not servicing clients anymore that makes sense. There's not a lot of hope out there that this thing is going to turn around and they're going to be able to just hire enough people to get the work done anymore.
Well, we're going to keep working on it until they start to see it.
I'm just wondering how many changes are cosmetic and paid lip service and how many really move the dial, because we are in the midst of huge economic changes. I was just thinking, as you were all talking there, about the firm structure and the partnership model and how attractive that is. You can change whatever you like, but if they're coming into the same kind of firms with the same kind of setups, Roger, do you have a thought on that?
Yeah, I do. I've got an individual that I work with that's trying to change that dynamic. He and his firm is very focused on trying to get to a 40-hour work week during tax season. And he's trying to appeal to the fact that people have lives outside of work. And so he is trying to change that paradigm of what the firm looks like and the pathway to partnership. So he's done a phenomenal job as he's trying to reinvent, as he sees it, what the career for an accountant should be. And so he's doing a phenomenal job. His last tax season, they averaged as a firm 42.6 hours. And they felt that they this year may get closer to that 40-hour work week. And I think that's an admirable thing that they need to be doing, because what Gary's pointing out is this is real time. This is now. This is what's happening today. And as firms are trying to address this, they are trying to find, let's say, non-traditional solutions. And I do believe the offshore solution is something that before was kind of pushed off and maybe poo-pooed a little bit. But now, no, it's something that people are embracing simply because they need an immediate solution, because they have work that needs to be done, deadlines that need to be met. And this is one of those viable solutions that they can tap into and leverage. So I'm of the opinion that if we want to use the word crisis, we can, but I do believe that there's solutions. The sky isn't falling. It's just we're having to act and move.
Calvin, you were one of the 111 people that came on our Five Questions for the Accounting World project. Lexi and Roger also took part in that. And I asked, the first question was, will the next generation of accountants be any different from their predecessors? And the answers were fascinating, but the consensus was, yes, of course they will be. But the point is, how will they be? And what we do know is they'll be more tech-savvy than the generation before them, and they'll be less tolerant of a traditional career where you've got to put in your 60, 80 hours or be chained to a desk in the dark in the hope of making partners. So all of things come into play that people want meaningful work now. They want interesting possibilities now. They're not going to tolerate anything else.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely true on all points. And even what you mentioned there in terms of traditional, I think that goes into one of the things that I think we talked about a little earlier in terms of our own self-inflicted wounds. And also just how many stakeholders are involved here.
Yeah,
you know, I hear often on my end from people who are trying to choosing accounting as a second profession or a next profession. And we ourselves will often say, oh, yeah, it's a great second profession. But we're not structured very well to do that. You know, I came on the very traditional path, you know, right out of college, went to a large accounting firm. From there, went to a smaller accounting firm, came to industry, so on and so forth. Here we are. That was very clearly defined for a 22 or 23 year old. But you make me a 32 or 33 year old. We have our own challenges on being accepting for that. Well, that's a non-traditional path. It could be a great path for someone to go down. And we'll be losing people in that way. I think part of what we have to be able to do, and this is a tough thing, is to keep the things that are working well and unapologetically let go of the things that aren't, and just move forward in a way that will encourage people to be a part of the profession. There's no doubt that the current and next generation of accountants will be more tech savvy. I can think of just how differently Arthur Andersen was when I joined it, and then how I left it just a few years later. I started on paper, I ended up on a laptop, and that was just over a few years. And that's even before we had phones that we would carry in our pockets that were basically computers. So there's enormous change going on right now. I think the ultimate success of that change will be very much governed, no pun intended, by how effective the entire profession is at adapting. Because any one part that doesn't will clearly be left behind. The question is going to be how well the rest of the profession will be able to move forward without that section.
Yeah. Roger, you're going to make a point.
I do. Calvin's very important comment about the second profession or second career choice. Accounting, what we find in the school that I operate is that many individuals, 2/3 of my students are individuals that are 35 years of age and older who are coming into the accounting profession as a second career. And they're looking at it as a way to actually leverage all of these things that we've discussed. But the problem is the pathway to becoming a CPA isn't one they can select. What they are becoming is enrolled agents. They're becoming accountants, bookkeepers. And it's simply because, as Lexley was identifying, the pathway to a CPA typically is in college, in your 20s, as you're starting your career choice. So there isn't this side juncture that you can, as a pathway, come in mid-career and say, you know what, as a 30, 40-year-old, I'd like to actually become a CPA. That's not an easy choice. Now, fortunately, what we experience is we have people that are coming in and finding very successful careers as bookkeepers, as accountants, as enrolled agents. But for CPAs, it's not an easy transition for them. And so that's one of the things that's frustrating the profession is if there's a demand for CPAs, and yet the only way to do it is typically from your 20s, we've got a problem.
Yeah, I think that that's a good point, that there's a tremendous opportunity for career changers. And how, what are the things that, what is that we can do to make this work easier for them?
What's their pathway? How do they do this? Do they really want to go back and get a 4-year, 6-year degree?
No, absolutely not. They probably have mortgages and children at that point. Or
I want to ease into some predictions for a moment, but I can't help thinking when we go back to the threats to the accounting profession and the CPA or the chartered accountant qualification. I had a story recently of a big business that had given their accounting work to a non-accredited. In fact, they were a software provider, but they were a licensed software provider that did the majority of the work, and they just got an accountant in at the last minute just to file the accounts. So where do the threats come from? Business advisors, coaches, consultants, all these other people, the technicians, if you like, the software people that are undermining the role of a CPA and saying, well, really, do we need CPA? If ChatGPT and AI can do a lot of it and we can outsource another lot of it, I'm just throwing out there as a grenade. Any final thoughts on that before I move you into sharing a couple of bold predictions for our audience before we finish up?
No one's going to jump on it.
Yeah, no one's jumping on it. If you said it's a grenade,
I've stunned you all there with that one. Sorry about that. Okay, well, as Calvin finishes his last sup of rocket fuel caffeine, we're going to ask our panel, okay, we feel mildly optimistic, maybe even wildly optimistic, but what is coming up? What can we say with boldness? Gary, let's start with you. If I were to ask you to give us a couple of surefire bets of what's coming up for accounting over the next few years, what would you say?
Well, let me give you two in the next couple of years, and then I'm going to give you one 5 years out. How's that?
Okay, that's very precise. Our accounting audience will like that.
I am a reformed CPA. In order to enter the CPA profession in the private equity market, I think there's like this rule that they have to call me. I'd say probably twice a week, I'll have some kind of discussion with the private equity about, so I think the floodgates are just beginning to open. I think you're going to see so much private equity activity, in the coming years.
What is that going to mean, Gary? What's going to be the impact of that?
More firms will be acquired. More firms are going to take some cash up front. They're going to, play the game and see how it ends. But I think there's going to be more private equities out there. I think what will happen is the more that they're there, it'll potentially raise the pricing. So it'll even become more attractive to those who are interested. But I think we're going to see more PE. The gates are open. I've said this my entire life, Bob. This is a profession of followers, not necessarily leaders. And once it starts, it just keeps going. And so I think we're going to see a tremendous amount of additional PE. Second is, I kind of alluded to this in the beginning, which I think I think just because of the staffing shortages we're seeing, you know, it's going to take a decade to fix these things, you know, to potentially the level it needs to be fixed. But work still needs to get done. So I think you're going to see the profession go become much more transactional than relationship. There's still an opportunity for relationship. You know, it's very valuable, but there's not as many people who can do it, nor there's not as many people coming along who are going to do it. So I think you're going to see a lot of these firms acting more like banks, where you're going to have senior vice presidents. That's going to become much more transactional. And then the last prediction is, I've seen this movie before. I've been practicing public accounting forever. I had clients. I was involved. I can't tell you how many clients over the years I saw sell the PE and then buy it back 5 years later at a bargain price. So I think you're going to see 5 to 7 years, some of these PEs fail. And what's going to happen is the partners are going to buy it back at 10 cents on a dollar. I've seen that movie before.
That's going to be interesting. Okay. Thank you for that. Roger Connect, a couple of bold predictions that you would put your house on. What have you got for us?
I don't know that I'm going to wager my home, but here's what I'm going to tell you. I do feel that offshore accounting is going to become more of the norm. It's going to become something that is going to be more of the regular business model for the accounting firms. And you're going to find that whether they go to India, Philippines, South America, it's just going to be something that is going to be normal. It's expected. So that's one of the things that I would definitely see is in the next few years just becoming commonplace. The second thing, and it's going to be a bold one, this is one that I'm going to go out on a limb on, that's why I won't wager my home, is I believe that the relationship that the businesses and individuals have right now with the IRS and the states as they file their taxes, it's going to become more of a pull than a push. Right now, we have to file our returns, we have to submit them. All of a sudden, what's happening is there's going to be a bottleneck, and I think the accounting profession is going to basically get in a pinch where they just can't help and file, and people are going to be doing a lot of extensions, and the IRS and such are going to realize we've got to make it such that we can now go into some of these accounting payroll companies, say general ledger companies, and just now grab the information and have a direct feed into the government. And I'm anticipating legislation will be passed that will actually cause more of a pull type scenario than a push type scenario.
Just a quick comment on that. You mentioned IRS. We've got in the UK HMRC, which was Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs. Now it's His Majesty's Revenue and Customs with the King in place. And it is a complete bottleneck. Getting help from HMRC to file things and get things done is such a, it's like pulling teeth. So we've got similar problems here, and I'm sure governments are experiencing the same. Calvin, let's come to you on your, what are you going to double down on for the next couple of years? And then we'll finish with Lexi.
Yeah, well, we'll see how bold it really is. But I think the accounting firm model will continue to change. I actually think it will change. I think it'll be very much affected by both the PE and the offshoring. When I was doing fractional CFO work, 15 years ago, back in the state where Lexi is from, which is where I'm from as well, I had just started getting calls offshore, and it was just a little uncomfortable. Now it's normal, I think people will do it parts because technology will make it so much easier and because there will be a necessity to do so. And I also think we'll see that, just to Gary's point, I think that we'll see a lot of the PE activity. I think it'll trickle at first, but I think we'll see a lot of cases where people are buying back their firms, which will end up creating just a vicious cycle on. I think we'll end up losing a little momentum when in the end there.
Sounds like we're entering something of a whirlwind. Lexi, let's leave the final thoughts with you. What do you see coming up in that crystal ball of yours that you would be 100% sure about?
First of all, I just want to say I agree with a lot of what you guys have said. And you know, my thoughts immediately would be like the consolidation piece absolutely is continuing. To Gary's point, it's an interesting outcome from the PE perspective, because my question has always been, what's the end game? I see it with our clients, but what is the end game? PE is in it for a short period of time. It's not a long-term investment. So what is it going to look like? And we've got some that have done it several years ago, and I'm curious to see how that all plays out, what's going to happen next. And I'm going to go to my passion, the people. I think the National Pipeline Advisory Group, the work that we're doing, and some suggestions that we have. And then the next phase of that is the execution of that. And would be going to be bold and say, we're going to start to see some impact. We're going to have some short-term things we're going to see some impact on, so that Gary, the 150 firms you're working for in 2 years, they're going to see something, at least going in the right direction. Because I think there's too many conversations about it. Too many people realize that they have to own something in this, whether it's getting our partners, getting our staff people back in high schools to talk, working with the state societies to get back into the high schools. Because if they don't have the funding for an accounting class, then how is it that we go and educate them? I mean, Kimberly Ellison Taylor is a former chairman of AICPA. She got introduced because a CPA came into her kindergarten classroom, and she knew that point on that she was going to be a CPA. So we just have to do more of that. And I think there's a lot more dialogue and people are willing to do this. So firms are beginning to support this now, asking, what can we be doing? How can we be having our people become involved? And frankly, this next generation wants to be giving back to a community. This is a great way to give back to our profession and our community.
I'm just thinking as a committed Christian about well, fishermen, tax collectors, doctors, whatever they were back in the day, started a worldwide movement because they were evangelists. They really believed in what they were doing and what price the accounting evangelist to go out there and sell these great stories. I'm going to ask you for a 10-word answer or less as we finish off to ask you, is it a good time to be an accountant? Is it a good time to be in the accounting profession? Roger, what do you think?
Absolutely. Fun, exciting, rewarding, and most importantly, impactful.
Nicely done. Lexi?
It's a great time to become a CPA. And I say that because we are in change. And if you want to be a part of that change, come on board.
Calvin, great time to be in this game?
Best time ever. Use technology and you'll win. I think that was 11. Sorry.
Yeah, I was more than 10.
Nicely done. Gary's looking very thoughtful there. So there's going to be some profound words coming out here.
only two words. And I would say there's exceptional opportunity right now.
Let's finish with that. The future is bright. There are opportunities that need to be taken, but we stand on the verge of something great. Thank you so much, all of you, for your contributions, your passion, your insights today. It's been a wonderful conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.